everyone, to the Apocalypse Podcast. I'm Steve Hughes.
Lawrence Van Beek.
Oh, it's a very not formal term. Not no, but enough. I like it. It's not using to, it's using vu.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yes, like that too?
I am the more classy Frenchman.
Yes. Yes. He's a higher rung.
Yeah.
Folks, it's good to, you know, hey, I'm scared where we're going to go. I'm going to change the topic. good to be back amongst you. I know we've been off. We've been busy. We've been traveling. Stuff's happened. Good stuff.
We have lives beyond the podcast.
There's things that people pay us for.
That's right. So, Steve, today we're going to talk about Paul in Corinth, and it actually has a little expression down around verse 9 that is really important to me. But let's go ahead with this. And then we're going to do Priscilla and Aquila as well.
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, who else would have matching, you know, rhyming names?
Priscilla, that's right. Yeah, they struggled with that through their lives.
Yeah, kindergarten was rough. You know, because they were married then already, which was weird too, right? But anyway.
But Luke, true to form, mentions the woman first. He talks about Priscilla first.
Interesting.
And we'll get to that in a moment, I guess. But I guess we should just start at number one, eh?
Okay. So, folks, Acts 18, verse 1 of chapter 18. After this, Paul left Athens and went to Corinth. And there he met a Jew named Aquila, a native Pontus, who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had ordered all Jews to leave Rome. Paul went to see them, and because he was a tent maker, as they were, he stayed and worked with them. Every Sabbath he reasoned in the synagogue, trying to persuade the Jews and Greeks. When Silas... Oh, you want me to stop there? I can.
No, keep going.
Okay, sure. Picking up at verse 5 then. When Silas and Timothy came from Macedonia, Paul devoted himself exclusively to preaching, testifying to the Jews that Jesus was the Messiah. But when they opposed Paul and became abusive, he shook out his clothes in protest and said to them, "Your blood be on your own heads. I am innocent of it. From now on, I will go to the Gentiles." Then Paul left the synagogue and went next door to the house of Titius?
Yes.
Justus, a worshiper of God. Crispus, my favorite name in this whole passage, the synagogue leader, and his entire household believed in the Lord. And many of the Corinthians who heard Paul believed and were baptized.
Okay, and that's good for now. So.
Okay.
Okay. So Paul leaves Corinth, leaves Athens. He goes to Corinth, and he meets these Jewish people, Aquila first, and then with his wife Priscilla, which is interesting, right? They came from Italy, which is kind of nice. But I don't know why I like that.
Because you can hear him saying, "Hey, Priscilla, what's wrong with you?"
And yet they're Jewish, so you got to do the Jewish Italian accent.
I can't do that. Can you? I can't.
I can't do any accents.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, except maybe my mother's, but the Dutch thing I can do. So. Now, Paul, this is kind of weird because Paul's a tent maker. These guys, turns out, they're tent makers. There seem to be tent makers everywhere, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Those and tanners, because the tanners and the tent makers went together because you use the...
Makes sense.
The tanned hides to make your tents, yeah.
Yeah, makes sense.
And so then Paul meets up with these guys and he starts working. And so nobody seemed to have regular jobs. That was one of the oddities. Like there were soldiers and there were people that did... you know, lifelong jobs, but there were no people working for the railroads.
Right.
Of course, that would be more difficult because there were no railroads. But, you know, or you know, the highway guys and all those. But Paul was a self-employed person.
Right.
So, you know, from the book of Acts, we should say if you want to be a missionary, it's always better to be self-employed. When I was thinking about missions at one point, the Pentecostal guy came and he said, "So what does your wife do?" And I said, "Well, what are you asking me?" You know, and he wanted to know if she had been a nurse or something like that, because they really felt that if she was a nurse, then it'd be more worthwhile. And they didn't send us because because Lynn wasn't a nurse. She was a florist, and they don't really need florists in other countries.
Oh.
And so we didn't end up going, which was fantastic, because, you know, learning more about these countries, I'm really glad I didn't go. But Paul comes in, and he's a tent maker, and they're tent makers. And so he works. Paul's working. this is not us, you know, supporting missions at this point in time, is it? But Paul was a missionary, and then he went to the synagogue, which was, as was his habit, right? He would go to the synagogue first, and he's trying to persuade the Jews and the Greeks, right? So after a little while, Silas and Timothy, they come to Macedonia. When they come, Paul devotes himself specifically to preaching and testifying to the Jews that Jesus is Messiah. So he works for a while as a tent maker. When his friends come, then he devotes himself strictly to ministry. So you get the idea that Silas and Timothy were doing something to earn money too.
Okay.
So that he could continue to minister. It's really, they lived a different kind of life in those days, right?
Yeah.
Don't forget, it's a warm country. You're not spending half your time trying to figure out how to keep from freezing all winter and working like we do in Canada. So,
yep.
Or in the northern United States.
Yep.
So, but then the Jewish people oppose Paul, and they become abusive. He shook off his clothes. Remember Jesus sent out the guys?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. So it's kind of a symbol to them that, I've done everything I can, and I'm done with you.
Yep.
And they would get that. It's a little different for us. He says, your blood be on your own heads. I'm innocent, and I'm going to go to the Gentiles. So he stays with the Jews until they kick him out, which is always his practice.
But is it a little bit of judgment that he is almost calling down on them? Because Jesus kind of, his connotation was judgment at that time too, right? You know, it would be easier for Sodom and Gomorrah in those days. Is that kind of part of that sort of whole thing of him shaking the clothes out to saying, you're on your own, have fun?
I think that would be okay. I would have teachers that would kind of fuss with that, because they wouldn't like for Paul to ever do anything judgy like that. Mm-hmm. More, I'm innocent of this thing now. I've done my responsibility. I can freely go to the Gentiles. You've had your chance. Now I'm going to go to the Gentiles. But the Jewish people, many Jewish people still come over. Like in the very next verse, you're going to find out that Crispus comes. Mm-hmm. You know. Not Christmas, but Crispus.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to one and all. It does sound like a tasty treat, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It does.
Yeah.
All right, where do you want me to pick it up?
We still haven't finished about Crispus here.
Okay, keep
going. And then I'll get you to pick it up.
Yep.
So Paul leaves. This is so funny. He leaves the synagogue and goes all the way next door. That's right.
Which I love. Yeah. Okay, well, I'm done with you. And next door we go.
To the house of Justus, who was a worshiper of God. So Crispus, the synagogue leader, and his whole household believed, though. So he goes to the synagogue, and a lot of Jewish people believe. And remember, one of the important things in Acts is that you're moving away from Judaism to Christianity. Christianity embraces both Jews and Gentiles.
Right.
So you're not winning people to Judaism, but you're winning people to Christianity from everywhere. And that's a big part. And so they believe, and they're baptized.
Okay.
And interesting in the New Testament how quickly people, well, I don't know if they were quickly baptized, because he was in Corinth for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So I don't know how quick that's, I don't know the time frame of all this happening. Like, right. It sounds like it happened within a week, but it was probably months that it took for all this.
Yeah. Place. Yeah. Yeah. Because he's not leaving us any time markers, is he, at all?
No.
Really, the pace of it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So chapter 9, or verse 9.
Good stuff. All right. One night, the Lord spoke to Paul in a vision. Do not be afraid. Keep on speaking. Do not be silent, for I am with you, and no one is going to attack you or harm you, because I have many people in this city. So Paul stayed in Corinth for a year and a half, teaching them the word of God.
Okay, let's stop there. And this is the one that's so important, because you remember he writes 1st and 2nd Corinthians, and there's probably another Corinthian book that he writes in the middle of that. If you believe that Paul wrote all of those books, and I do, I'm comfortable with that.
Yep.
So you always had this impression of Paul, like nothing slows him down, right? He goes into the one city, they stone him and leave him for dead. He goes into another, and he's beaten with rods. you know, three times I was beaten with rods. And he actually says this stuff in the book of Corinth,
right?
In the book of Corinthians. But at this point in his ministry, when you think that he's some kind of superhero, he wants to quit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And God has to speak to him in a vision and tell him, like, don't be afraid. You're not going to be harmed in this city.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to treat you like crap, and you're going to have to defend yourself in the book of 2 Corinthians, but you're not going to be hurt. So that, I think that is super important for all Christians to know that you know, this power of the Spirit being upon him, as you saw in Peter in the beginning, you know, where he stood up, when he could stand up to those guys every time,
right?
And the disciples stood up. It's not something that has to last your whole life. You can have moments of fear and moments of doubt.
Yeah. Right.
And Paul had that.
Yeah, but that doesn't usually fit our narrative of Paul, right? Our narrative is he's a hard charge and everything's gung-ho, everything's great. And yet, like you said, this is such a great point here to go, even Paul was going, seriously?
I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. And God had to come in and calm him down.
Yeah, yeah.
And it says here he stayed there a year and a half after that.
So. And did you mention this in a previous chapter that he was maybe physically just beaten up at this point too, right? He was just, it wasn't that he was spiritually tired, he was physically tired at this point too, right?
Well, there are people that think that some of the things when he asked God to take away, you know, that thorn in his side, some people think that had to do with some of the beatings that he had.
Yeah.
It could have been his poor eyesight, it could have been something else, it could have been these beatings. When they stone you and leave you for dead, like your body's broken. Like broken, like you've got broken arms, maybe broken legs, your, you know, wounded head.
Yeah.
You know, like very serious damage from these kind of beatings. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So he's afraid. Paul's afraid when he's here.
Yeah. Okay. Verse 12.
Gallio.
Gallio, thank you, because I'm like, really?
That's, you want to say Galileo for some reason.
You do, right? Because that's all I can hear in my head. Well, Gallio was proconsul of Achaia. The Jews of Corinth made a united attack on Paul and brought him to the place of judgment. This man, they charged, is persuading the people to worship God in ways contrary to the law. Just as Paul was about to speak, Gallio said to him, If you Jews are making a complaint about some misdemeanor or serious crime, it would be reasonable for me to listen to you. But since it involves questions about words and names and your own law, settle the matter yourselves. I will not be a judge of such things. So he drove them off. And then the crowd turned on Sosthenes, the synagogue leader, and beat him in front of the proconsul. And Gallio showed no concern whatsoever.
It's just crazy, yeah. It sounds like New York is what it sounds. Yeah. So the synagogue leader thinks he's going to get Paul in all kinds of trouble, and it just turns on its head, and they just beat him. They beat him to a pulp, and Gallio goes, whatever. So nowadays we'd say, you know, there's a lot of cultural problem here, that Gallio doesn't care what's happening to this Jewish synagogue leader, but they would have allowed him to beat up Paul if they had the chance to. So it's quite humorous. Yeah, the way the whole thing turns. So that's the end of that. Now Paul keeps, as he stays in Corinth during that year and a half, he runs into Priscilla and Aquila.
Right. So here we are at verse 18, folks. Paul stayed on in Corinth for some time. Then he left the brothers and sisters in sailed for Syria, accompanied by Priscilla and Aquila. Before he sailed, he had his hair cut off at Caesarea?
Sure, that sounds good.
Yeah, because of a vow he had taken. Oh, I'll ask you about that later.
Okay.
They arrived at Ephesus, where Paul left Priscilla and Aquila. He himself went into the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. When they asked him to spend more time with them, he declined. But as he left, he promised, I will come back if it is God's will. Then he set sail from Ephesus. When he landed at Caesarea, he went up to Jerusalem and greeted the church, and then went down to Antioch. After spending some time in Antioch, Paul set out from there and traveled to a place throughout the region of Galatia and Phrygia, strengthening all the disciples.
Okay.
Meanwhile, I can stop there.
Oh, we can stop. We'll do Apollos after.
Yep.
So you were going to ask me a question, you said.
Oh, that it was just interesting that Paul is still, in some senses, obeying bits and pieces of Judaism, right? Because, you know, because he's still trying to win these people over, right?
Yeah, remember he says somewhere else, "I'll be all things to all people." You know, right. I'll do it. But I don't know if it's that or if it's something else in his past that they call this vow a Nazarite vow,
right?
And it was something that people would just take on. They would take a vow, a little bit like fasting. You know, they would take a vow where you don't cut your hair. The only two pieces of it I always recall are the don't cut your hair and you don't touch wine.
Yeah, that's what I remember.
Yeah, for the period of the vow. So it's whatever period you choose, right? And it's kind of like Movember, you know, you don't...
Did not see this coming.
being that we're in the middle of Movember, you don't shave for the whole thing, and it helps the hockey team, and things like that. So it's that kind of a vow, but this is a spiritual thing that they did.
Right.
And I think it was just a thing you'd say, okay, Lord, to show you that I'm serious, I'll do this for a period of time. And Paul did that.
Right.
And then the vow is over. So he gets his hair cut. That's all they talk about. They don't say he drank a glass of wine. They just say, yeah. So we Pentecostals are still safe. And so he gets his hair cut and then he goes on his way. Now in Syria, he's accompanied to Syria by Priscilla and Aquila. And this is where I said that he mentions Priscilla first before Aquila. They usually say that probably means that Priscilla was a woman of greater status than her husband Aquila. That's why he mentions her first.
Interesting. Yeah.
But it could also be just that's Luke's style. Remember, he often mentions prominent women. He always mentions prominent women in his book. And so we figure that's the case. There are some people that think that Priscilla was the author of the book of Hebrews.
Oh.
And the reason that the name is not mentioned in Hebrews is because it was written by a woman and she wouldn't mention her name if that was the case. Mm-hmm. So there's all these little weird things. There's nothing to say that Priscilla wrote it.
Yeah.
Nothing to prove that at all. Just some people go, hey, I wonder if it was Priscilla.
Yeah. I get you.
Yeah. But he leaves them in Syria. So if he left them in Syria, he probably left them in Damascus, you know.
Mm.
Which we know all about nowadays from all of the serious things that are going on in Syria today.
Yeah.
And Damascus is the one city, the longest standing city that's kept the same name.
And, that's right.
Yeah, and run by the Syrians. So Paul left them there, and then he went on his way to encourage, and he went down to Jerusalem and through Great Galatia and Phrygia. And then for some reason, Luke wants to spend just a moment to talk about this guy Apollos, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And that's verse 24.
Meanwhile, a Jew named Apollos, a native of Alexandria, came to Ephesus. He was a learned man with thorough knowledge of the scriptures. He had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and he spoke with great fervor and taught about Jesus accurately, though he only knew of the baptism of John. He began to speak boldly in the synagogue. When Priscilla and Aquila heard them, they invited him to their home and explained to him the way of God more adequately. When Apollos wanted to go to Achaia, the brothers and sisters encouraged him and wrote to the disciples there to welcome him. When he arrived, he was a great help to those who by grace had believed, for he vigorously refuted his Jewish opponents in public debate, proving from the scriptures that Jesus was the Messiah.
Kind of an intriguing little piece, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah.
And I love that little thing. He explained to him the way of God more adequately. You know, that's kind of an interesting way of saying that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think one version I had would say explained more accurately the way of God. So you've got Priscilla and Aquila, and this guy named Apollos comes into their church, and he's speaking. He's speaking from the scriptures.
Right.
But he doesn't know enough. And so this is very cool because they take a young guy that doesn't know enough, and instead of refuting him in public, they take him out for lunch, and is that what they said?
Yeah, so they began to speak, and they invited him to their home.
Yes, they take him to Denny's and they say, hey, listen, you know.
And explain. It's Ricky's, right? Isn't it Ricky's? Yeah.
All day grill. Yeah. And then they take him and they show him the way more. This is actually the very first sermon I ever preached when I was in college.
Oh, really? Oh, that's cool. That's really cool.
And my teacher said I got it all wrong. But you know what? After all of this time, I still think I'm right. Yeah. His name was Paul Hawks. Paul Hawks Sr. said, no, you're wrong. Because I said he only understood the baptism of John. So he's baptized into John's baptism. But he had never accepted Christ as Savior, been baptized into the Lord.
Right.
And my teacher said, no, this means that he wasn't baptized in the Holy Spirit. And to this day, I do not see what he was talking about.
Yeah.
I still think, you know, he was steeped in Pentecostalism and couldn't get past it.
Take that.
Yeah. Not that you should ever get past Pentecostalism. But for sure, he'd been baptized into John, and now they were telling him the way of Christ more accurately. Once he learned the way of Christ more accurately, he was able to go back and utilize his knowledge. And it doesn't say whether he was a Pharisee or something else, like why he had such a thorough knowledge of Scripture.
Right.
But he was able to use it to publicly debate. It would be kind of neat that they would have public debates on this kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And that's a very Greek thing to do. Mm-hmm. It's very Jewish too amongst the rabbis later on.
Right.
Right.
Would Alexandria? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, Alexandria. What?
Well, I was going to say, would Alexandria have a really large Jewish population as well?
Yes, it would. There'd be a strong population of Jewish people in Alexandria. Which Alexandria it is, I'm not sure either, because there were Alexandrias all over the. Because you know, remember Alexander. He named a lot of cities after him.
Sure. Yeah. Slightly vain. Hello.
We usually think this is the Alexandria that had the library. Remember the big
right,
library?
Yeah.
And this is where the Septuagint is formed in Alexandria, the 72, the 72 scholars that got together.
Right.
Which was just a story about the Septuagint, of course.
Right.
So that's what we think. We think that's the Alexandria. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's actually if you do studies of the New Testament, this is the neutral book of the New Testament that is from this part of the world too, is from Alexandria. There's Caesarea and there's the Byzantine version and there's the Alexandrian version, which is considered the most pure.
Okay.
Interesting. So it's kind of neat that way. But this is where he comes from. He really knows the Scriptures. These people treat him very well, and because of the way we figure the way they treated him, he was able to go off and continue the ministry so well.
Yeah. And is mentioned later on, right?
Yeah. So. Did I say the Alexandrian text was a neutral text? That's what I said, right?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure I said it right.
No, you did.
It's been a long time since I've done textual criticism.
No, you did good. You did perfect.
Or lower criticism.
That's right. No, you did perfect. I think that's this is a really interesting part. Like you said, Luke sneaks this in almost like, oh, by the way. And there was this guy, Apollos, by the way.
Yeah, and Priscilla and Aquila, you know, like, why even bring them in? This is the only place they're ever mentioned that I can recall.
Right.
So, but it's important to the spread of the gospel and to the movement of the gospel.
Right.
But Luke does this. He throws these little side stories in all the time, doesn't he? Where you're going, I don't know why he did that. I don't know why he threw in the witch or the woman with the spirit.
Right.
I don't know why he does that. So.
Yeah.
That's the conundrum of narrative, right?
Yeah. It was meaningful to him, but we thousands of years later. Thousands of years later going, I'm sure he saw something here. I just don't know.
Yeah. And it's like we always say too, in narrative, like to pick out doctrine from narrative isn't that easy.
Right.
Because, you know, you gotta kind of read through the stories to figure out the doctrine that's coming forward.
Good point, so, buddy.
Yeah.
Good point.
Anyway, so that's it for Acts 17.
Yeah. Except it was 18.
Except this is 18.
But we did a bang up job of 17 too.
yeah. So if our listeners, you know, after hearing this one, they may want to go back and listen to 17 again.
Again, yeah.
Because it's been just a while.
Put these two on repeat. Y'all just love them. No, Lara, appreciate the wisdom. Appreciate what you brought out of this passage, because some things that I hadn't thought of, you brought out, and just kind of, wow, yeah, that's a great point. Folks, we're so glad that you joined us. And we're back to a little more stretch of where we'll do this a little bit more regularly, probably till the end of the year as we approach Christmas. And then, you know, we'll kind of take our usual hiatus around Christmas again too.
Yes.
Not because we want to, but because we're forced to by our wives.
because I married Mrs. Claus.
Larry has presents to deliver. So, folks, thanks again. We'll see you next week. And until then, I'm Steve, he's Larry, and this was the Apocalary Podcast.